Alan Wallace, Dr. Alan Wallace, is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. You do have the Santa Barbara Institute for the Study. All right, you say it.
I have established the Santa Barbara Institute for Consciousness Studies.
All right. Both ways, one is studying consciousness.
One hopes so.
And you are doing that in all kinds of interesting ways, including going out into the academic places and debating and thinking and working with anybody who will work with you. And apparently there are people who will not work with you, it appears. This notion that we know some things and we can really do some things. Yes, there are those laggards, but then you also smile and get up and go forward. Some of that going forward isn't arcane at all. It's something I can do going to sleep. It's something that people can do of which each and every one of us actually could have our own lives better and thereby perhaps let there be peace in the world and let it begin with me.
Sure, sure.
Without being New Agey at all.
Sure.
You have addressed some of that as you think about meditation. Is that the bus to catch?
I think if we understand meditation in a broad and non-dogmatic way, the answer is yes. But meditation often has a rather esoteric, occult, and trendy quality to it. Oh, I'm going to meditate now. Like, instead of getting massage, you know, instead of going out and sitting in the sauna for a little while, or the jacuzzi, I think I'm not going to have the jacuzzi. I'll go for a meditation session instead. And so it can be very cute and very trivial. But if we go back to the great contemplative traditions of the world, of which happily we have quite a few, I can cite just one that I think has an exceptional richness, and that is the whole Indian-based matrix of meditative traditions. And in Sanskrit, one of the primary terms for meditation is called bhavana, and it just means to cultivate, to cultivate. So is cultivation of the heart, the mind, cultivating our way of being present with the world and engaging with the world, could cultivation be the key to finding fulfillment, to waking up, and being more vividly, lucidly engaged with the reality that we are and the reality that surrounds us, yes, then meditation is the key.
And then the Buddha, the historical Buddha, comes along and says, yes, and. What is that yes, and?
This requires, in the bigger picture, a commitment without parallel. Talking about a revolution, talk about a renaissance. It's not something that I want to impose on somebody else. This revolution, this renaissance, it starts internally, or it's a sham. We know about revolution, political revolutions, where you come and you topple one awful regime, and after only 20, 30 years, you have the awful regime, and other people are trying to topple you, and it's on and on, one outer revolution after another. But this type of revolution calls for a radical reorientation of our way of life, that there are guiding stars. I think the guiding star of nonviolence, that we don't do violence to ourselves, to other people, to other species, to the environment. And where possible, we are of service. We really cultivate the seeds of happiness and well-being in ourselves, other people, other species, and the environment. It's called ethics. And we've sided that largely with religion. It's time to overcome that one more imbalance, leaving science with all of its knowledge and power, science and technology, virtually devoid of ethics, is one of the catastrophes of the 20th century. Keeping religion over here, this foolish notion of non-overlapping magisteria, that keep religion over here in its side of the ring and don't let it touch science, keep science over here in its side of the ring, don't let it touch religion. Well, we tried that the 20th century. By the way, that came out a disaster. And so religion must be informed. It must have the eyes of science, of empirical knowledge. And science must be informed by ethics, by ideals. It's always been value-laden. Science has never, ever in its history been value-free. That is a myth. And so meditation entails ethics as its foundation, a radical reorientation of our way of being present in the world and engaging, and upon the basis of that, cultivating the heart and mind to develop exceptional states of mental balance, psychological well-being, eudaimonia. And upon the basis of that, there may be a possibility of what the great contemplatives throughout history have been talking about for millennia, and that is genuine transcendence. But all in good time, ethics, then the cultivation of the heart and mind, and finally transcendence.
That action element, that as I understood what you said of the historical Buddha, that he understood that contemplative, and it had to have action to go the next step.
These are the two wings. As the metaphor is, a bird can't fly with one wing. And the two wings by which Buddhism has taken flight, when it has flown well over the last 2,500 years, are called wisdom and skillful means. And the very essence of skillful means is compassion. But skillful means means all the doing that we do, all the engaging that we engage, hopefully, ideally, motivated, aroused, inspired by compassion, by caring. There's a more fundamental term. The Dalai Lama loves to bring this one out. There's a term more fundamental than love or loving kindness, more fundamental than compassion, and that is caring, a heartfelt caring. That if this inspires, that I truly do care about myself, not in a self-centered or narcissistic fashion, but I care about this human being, and I want this human being to flourish. That's not a bad thing. But as soon as I affirm that, then I recognize, well, right now, my presence is not independent of your presence. I'm arising from moment to moment. Bill is arising from moment to moment. We're a triad here, and that's just in the small container. And that we are rising and rising from moment to moment together. So the notion that somehow I could flourish independently of you and independently of my environment is a fool's errand.
Alan Wallace, we'll be back in a moment.